The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Welcome to Red Leg Nation Radio, your home for discussion and analysis of Cincinnati Reds baseball all year long. Now here's your host, Chad Dotson.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Red Leg Nation Radio. This is episode number 376 of the World's Most Dangerous Podcast. I'm your host, Chad Dotson. With me this week, your friend and mine, Jason Linden. How are you today, Jason?
I am doing well. How are you today, Chad?
Well, you know, I'm doing well. You know, if you're asking me personally how I'm doing pretty well. But if we're talking about the Reds, team. go ahead.
Well, I was going to say it's rough. You know, they got to 500, then they got swept. But, you know, hopefully the off day today will give them a chance to recharge. There definitely was not a baseball game that happened today, Thursday, May the 20th.
Yeah, well, about that, right. No one actually played, at least no one in the Red uniforms played Major League Baseball. The Reds did, since we spoke last week, the Reds fought back and won the last two games of that series out there in Colorado to split the series and actually get to 500. And so, all right, exciting. And then they proceed to return home to Great American Ballpark and lose four consecutive games to the San Francisco Giants. So they are now four games under 500 as we record. And the finale, as Jason alluded to just now, of that series was a disaster, with the Giants winning 19-4. Tyler Mahle, who had been fantastic all season long, just got rocked, and it didn't get better until they started putting in position players to pitch. I mean, it was just ugly.
Listen, I think that Chad is having an hallucination. Forgive him, but there was no baseball game today.
We're going to agree to forget this game? That didn't happen?
Yes.
Okay.
It didn't happen.
All right. Listen, I'm okay with that. Although I do want to make one point. The Reds did have, in this game that didn't happen, if it were to have happened, the Reds would have used two position players on the mound. And let's say their names would have been Alex Blandino and Max Schrock. The last time, Bobby Nightingale had this note on Twitter.com, Bobby Nightingale of the Inquirer, the last time the Reds used two position players to pitch in the same game, 1902. And evidently at the end of the game, it was at the Pirates. It was at Pittsburgh. And the fans were refunded their money.
Really?
Yeah. And the manager of the Cincinnati team, who was, I believe, King Kelly, he was a player manager. He went to bat in the first inning smoking a cigarette. So.
Wow.
Yeah. So a little historical note. Should the Reds have – oh, no, they didn't. No fans will get their money back today because the game didn't happen. Before we leave this entirely, does it frustrate you? I mean, it does me, and probably it shouldn't, but does it frustrate you that the last three games of the Giants series featured winning pitchers named Anthony DeSclafani, Kevin Gausman, and Johnny Cueto, all former Reds?
Cueto frustrates me and will always frustrate me because I said at the time that he should have been locked up. Period. End of story. The other two, you know, I don't know. If you'd asked anybody, I think, you know, who would be better this year, Gausman and DeSclafani, or say, you know, Lorenzen and Mahle, which is really, you know, who was in the debate, you know, that's a coin flip.
Yeah.
So, you know, it sucks that because Lorenzen's been hurt and we've had, you know, Jeff Hoffman instead, who's been not great. So it sucks that the Reds have gotten kind of the bad side of that coin. But, I mean, really, overall, I mean, you know, our worst starting pitcher has been Luis Castillo. And nobody on earth saw that coming, so.
Yeah, I mean, Gausman, you know, is maybe the best pitcher in the National League this year so far. 4-0 with a 1.66 ERA. And listen, I like the guy, and I thought he had a chance of being a starter when he was in Cincinnati, and I thought they were going to try to work him as a starter, and then they let him go. And I can't say that I was I mean, you can see the talent, but I can't say that I was upset about that. So, whatever. If you're going to ask me Anthony DeSclafani versus Jeff Hoffman over the offseason, I'd have taken Disco, you know, every single day. But you're right. That's really sort of an unfair way to look at it. And Cueto, he's Cueto.
You will always love Johnny Cueto.
How can you not? Cueto off to a good start this season, 3-1, 3.334 ERA. So anyway, let's kind of talk about the week that was. One big thing that happened this week is that the Reds announced that beginning June 2nd, Great American Ballpark is going to return to full capacity, to which I say, I've been watching the games. It looks as full as it always does.
Well, they keep playing like this. They're not going to sell any more tickets, that's for sure.
They've probably hit their max, right?
Yeah.
So, anyway, that's something. If you want to go to Great American Ballpark, I will not be. But if you want to, please do, and go enjoy yourself if you wish. Quote unquote full capacity. Can we talk briefly about Amir Garrett? Because we talked about him last week, and now it's become even more apparent that it looks like Amir Garrett has gotten out of him whatever the issues were in the early part of the season. How big is that for the Reds?
That's huge. I mean, Amir and then Castillo's last start, which wasn't perfect, but, you know, much more. Those two things, if those two pitchers can get it together, then things look a lot rosier in a big hurt.
Yeah, I ordinarily wouldn't compare those two in terms of importance to the team, and I still don't think you can, but I do think Garrett's importance to this particular team is way more than I would ordinarily say for a relief pitcher, just because the Reds let Rosell Iglesias and Archie Bradley go for free, and they made no efforts whatsoever to upgrade the pen otherwise. Well, I guess they signed Sean Doolittle, and we can discuss that. But so Garrett and Lucas Sims have to be great. I just don't know how this team can survive long term without those two guys being great. And evidently he was his left shoulder was flying open earlier. Wade Miley noticed it and told him, evidently, and he's been Garrett since then, so that's good.
Yeah.
He got suspended 5 games, Jason, for yelling.
Yeah, and then a player hit another player for hitting a home run, and that pitcher got suspended for 3 games.
3 games, the White Sox game. Where Tony La Russa was basically urging the other team to throw at his hitters.
And I don't know how it works at your house, Chad. I know that you have children, but they're hopefully past this stage. You know, mine are almost, but not entirely past this stage. But, you know, in our house, traditionally, yelling has resulted in much less severe consequences than physical altercation does.
Yeah, yeah.
Assault gets you in more trouble. And I believe in your other profession, assault gets you in more trouble than yelling.
It's true.
Well, that's actually battery, right? If physical contact happens.
It is, yes. Yes. Very good, Jason. I didn't know you were a legal scholar.
I know way too many lawyers.
Yeah, that's a bad thing. Me too. So, anyway, Amir Garrett, that's good. Him getting 5 games. Maybe it's because he had a previous 8-game suspension there a couple of years ago. Maybe that played into it. I don't know, but get out of town. That's nonsense. So anyway, what else happened this week that we need to talk about? That really, you know, it's not the best week to be a Reds fan. And I wanted to start out with this question. I actually intended to begin, and we kind of went, you know, off the rails just a little bit, as we tend to do. But the question I wanted to ask to begin this podcast, because it's something a lot of people are talking about, as you noted before we started recording, is should Reds manager David Bell be on the hot seat? What do you think? Should he be on the hot seat? By that, I mean, should he be worried about how secure his job is? Do you have an opinion on this?
I do, a little bit, at least. Here's what I can say. If I went back through and looked at all the games, I'm sure I would find things that I disagreed with. But in general, I have not had an issue with how he has managed this year. I think that really he's done the best he can with what he has, you know, a thin bullpen and a roster that has 87 third basemen and no shortstops. You know, and I think given the pieces he's had to work with, I don't know that I would have done things all that different from how he has done them. But people like to blame somebody, and, you know, as is often the case in baseball, they make the mistake of blaming the manager and then the players. And then maybe if they sit by themselves quietly for a long time, they'll start to realize that it all goes back to the owner, who's actually the boss of everyone.
Yeah. I'm of a couple minds on this. First is that I've said this several times on the podcast. My opinion has just been that he does goofy things sometimes. This year, he's kind of, I think, gotten most of the big decisions, maybe not right, but the way I would have done them. So I can't really argue with him on some of these things.
Yeah, and on some of those, I always figure that when something that seems obviously weird happens, that there's probably a reason that we don't know about.
Right. You always have to assume that. I've just sort of traditionally said there's never been a single time during his tenure as manager of the Reds where his teams have overperformed expectations. And that's a kind of a vague way to judge a manager, but I think it's true, except for maybe a week and a half last year.
Yeah.
And then the second point is that, so I don't have any love for David Bell. I don't think he's a good manager. I don't know that he's an awful manager either, but I don't think he's a good manager. First of all, how are you going to fire the person who came in ninth in National League Manager of the Year voting last year?
I mean, how do you do that?
Oh, did you? Can you?
Top third, Chad.
Oh my gosh, it's amazing. Yeah, no, not top third in National League.
Oh, ninth in the National League.
Yes.
Well, that's top 60%, Chad.
There you go. Very good, David Bell. I guess, I don't think that based on the way things happen in Major League Baseball that he deserves to be fired. I'll say that right off the top. I will say that I don't think he's done a whole lot to, show that he deserves the job either, or that he's good at the job necessarily. I think a lot of the problems with the team and a lot of the frustrations, and this is sort of what you alluded to, not his fault at all. I mean, you can't look at this roster that he was given and say, oh, this is a world-beating team. Now, are they better than what they're playing now? I think so. But I don't know. Here's what frustrates me. Go ahead.
You know, I think there's maybe one thing that we can agree on. I'm going to throw this out and see if we can agree on something, which is that David Bell is a better manager than Tony La Russa.
Oh, gosh, yes. He's a Hall of Famer, Tony La Russa. You mispronounced that. Oh, my gosh, Tony La Russa is... He's not my favorite person. David Bell's not my favorite person. Can I veer off topic in order to make a point?
You can always veer off topic in order to make a point, Chad.
I promise I'm going to circle back around to my point. But I'm a pretty big fan of European soccer. And I'm not going to get into soccer, I promise. Those of you, because I know so many of you don't care, and that's fine. You don't have to care.
So many people just tuned off, right? Like Chad's mom just turned off the podcast right now.
I know, right? That's our only viewer anyway. But
you called it European soccer also, as though there's another kind of soccer.
European football is what I should have said. I'm not going to talk about the actual game, but I want to talk about the structure of the game as compared to the way that Major League Baseball is structured and the incentives. And one thing that over the decade or so that I've really been heavy into soccer, one thing that's always kind of blown me away is how quick teams are to get rid of their manager. I mean, they fire... An example is the team that I like, Tottenham Hotspur. They were in something called the Champions League Final, which is one of the greatest things. They lost, but runner-up in the Champions League, which is an incredible accomplishment for this this club who had never been that far in the Champions League. So 6 months later, they're in the bottom half of the standings in the next season, and they fired the manager that took them to heights that they'd never seen before, or they hadn't seen in decades. 6 months later, they fire this guy. They hired another manager. They've since fired him as well. So they've had three managers in the time that David Bell's been in Cincinnati. And the reason I'm bringing all this up is not to say that David Bell deserves to be fired, but that the incentive structure in football, European football, soccer, is that winning is more important than almost anything. Because if you lose, you drop down to the minor leagues. Promotion, relegation is what it's called. And some of the big, billion-dollar clubs, including Tottenham, tried to break away and kind of form their own league. And I'm not going to get into the details of that because it's not important. But the reason they did this, and I'm oversimplifying it, the reason they did that, the big money owners, is because They wanted control. They wanted, a lot of them now are owned by American owners, and they wanted a system like America where it didn't matter what your results are. We're still going to be guaranteed big money. So without having to do everything we have to do to win. In America, that's why this is not David Bell's fault. It goes back to Bob Castellani. There's no incentive to try to win. And so a mediocre manager, which I think David Bell's probably a mediocre manager, can just keep lingering because there's no urgency to win in really just about any American sport. And it's just that's the area, thinking about David Bell, where it really comes clear to me. Maybe that's not the right thing to do to fire a manager, but they're so desperate to win and to turn things around that they make decisions, man. They maybe that's not the right way to do it, but it is the fact that the Reds have had zero urgency to win for a long time from management.
I have several things to say in response to that, if I may.
Yeah, please do.
So, first of all, I think that's interesting. I don't follow European soccer, as you put it. But that's interesting about the managers, and that, you know, that makes sense, especially when I assume it's easier to turn over a manager than, you know, than part of your roster. And, you know, with baseball, you're right. With baseball in particular, I would argue right now, there's no incentive. And I think that a big part of that problem is that antitrust exemption.
Oh, get rid of it.
So you can't have, you know, some sort of like young rich owner or whatever come in and shake things up because everybody approves who's going to buy the team before it's sold. So they keep it in a club of people they know. And so it just kind of stays static. It stays very static, which is a big problem with the game, you know, right now. You know, people get mad where they're like, well, MLB's Twitter feed did this, but the league did that. You know, they're promoting this thing that they punished the player for. Man, the people making the punishment decisions are all like 304-year-old, wrinkly old, rich dudes. And the people running social media are young, and they're not on the old rich dudes' radar. Like, so that's why that disconnect is happening. But, and here's the next thing, because we're talking about ownership a little bit, right?
Absolutely.
I have an idea, and it's a great idea. I've had it before, but now seems the time to bring it up again. And you're going to love it, Chad. Are you ready?
I don't think I'm ready, but let's do it.
I would posit that there is no team in baseball, with the exception maybe of the Yankees, that is more deeply intertwined with its location than the Reds are. The Cincinnati Reds should go all Green Bay Packers and make it a publicly, like sell it to the public. Bob Castellini should sell the Cincinnati Reds to the public and let it be a publicly managed, not-for-profit, put everything back in the team, any excess or whatever can go to charity, like, team that is owned and run by the city or by the citizens of the city.
I'm all for it. I'll buy my shares. But instead, Bob Castellini, if he ever does sell, oh, please let him sell. He's going to sell it for $2 billion to some other rich dude or group of rich dudes. I mean, that's because of that antitrust exemption. But no, I love the idea. I love the idea. I just, David Bell deserves some blame for not being a good manager, I think. But, you know, he's also had his hands tied here.
And, you know, the players do seem to go to bat for him. In a way that I don't remember them going to bat for, say, like Brian Price.
Or Dave Miley.
Yeah, like, and, you know, there's something to that. You know, I know I've said this on here before, but, you know, one of the most illuminating things in my baseball writing experience was when I got to talk to Delino DeShields when he was managing the bats, because he would answer any question and not get offended, which was great. So you could ask him things about like lineup construction and stuff like that and like substitutions and whatnot. And that's kind of what I alluded to earlier, where oftentimes there are reasons that we don't know about. And so many of those things that we might question are more like, sometimes they're just interpersonal decisions. It's about keeping the team happy or keeping a particular guy in the head space you need to have him in or something like that. And they're all relevant reasons, but all the players liked playing for him, even if his managerial style was sometimes a little bit old school. And players seem to like playing for David Bell, at least fairly well. And so, you know, I don't know. But he doesn't seem to have the Dusty Baker magic where he makes all the boneheaded decisions that infuriate us, and then somehow the team plays better than it should.
Yeah, that's sort of where I was going to go. I think you're probably right. That's what it looks like from the outside, and we just don't know. And that's what everyone needs to remember is what we see David Bell do in 3 hours every day, that's not the majority of his job. There's so much of it that we don't get to see because we're not in the clubhouse. And Dusty's the one that, let me say, I'm perfectly willing to believe that David Bell's really good at everything else on the field. But at some point, I would think it would start to show up on the field, or else what's the point? Like you said with Dusty Baker, I mean, we, in retrospect, all have come to realize that whatever, you know, voodoo he did in the locker room or in the clubhouse, most players like playing for him, and he kept the clubhouse loose, and he just was, he was very good at that part of his job, even without the other stuff. And it showed up on the field in that they kind of, outperformed expectations often. And I can't make an argument to keep David Bell. I mean, I'm not saying we should fire him. I hate talking about firing guys anyway. This is their livelihood. But I don't know that the Reds should. It's not all his fault. But I can't really come up with a good argument as to why he deserves to be the manager of the Reds, except unless it's what you just said, which is he's good at the parts of the game that we can't see, but that the Reds can't see.
Yeah, it's true. I think he's an okay. You know, you said a mediocre. I think he's an okay manager, but I don't know. Really, it all comes down to personnel.
Right. Right.
Is in players, and this team, I'm sure everyone's giving it their all. I know everybody's giving it their all because they're a team that thinks they're better than their record, obviously. But like, it's just is not happening right now.
That flips back to what you were saying earlier when we were talking about the soccer, which is that really the best argument for firing David Bell right now is that you can't fire the players, and that's not a real argument. Right.
Yeah, it really isn't.
But let's talk about where we are. First of all, do we think that Bob Castellini is upset with where the Reds are right now, that they're 4 games under .500? I don't think so, because it's his fault. He didn't improve the roster any. What was he expecting? But we have exactly 120 games left. Is your opinion about this team any different than it was going into the season?
I mean, not really, except now they've got a 4-game hole to climb out of to get to .500.
Yeah.
I mean, it stinks that Joey is hurt. It stinks that Moose has been hurt a bunch. It stinks that Senzel keeps getting hurt. But the outfield, frankly, I'm not worried about the outfield because I feel like that we've got 5 players who are everyday quality players. So if one guy gets hurt, it's not a big deal. The infield is another situation, obviously.
Oh, my goodness. Let's talk about the infield. To answer my own question, I don't think that I feel any differently than I did before the season, but it is almost June now, and they are lingering below .500, and they've been there most of the season. At some point, the team's record it reflects the type of team they are. I still think, again, 120 games left, and I've seen enough good things to think we have a chance. But the worst thing that I've seen is this infield defense. And maybe it's just recency bias. I don't know, but have you ever seen a worse infield defense than this? It is a disaster.
I mean, not for the Reds. I don't think I have, no. I mean, this is not a good defensive team on the infield.
Tyler Stevenson started his first game at first base the other day, which I'm fine with that, especially given that, as you noted, the two other first basemen, Joey Votto and Mike Moustakas, are on the injured list, but he didn't have his own glove. This is a major league franchise, and he's asked to play a position that he had really never played before at the major league level. It's incredibly hard, as they say in Moneyball. Suarez has just been, I mean, we love Gino, but that's all I can do is just sigh. He's not been good. He's not been good.
And when he's been at third, he's looked fine.
Yeah.
Do you feel that way too? Like at third base, I'm like, oh yeah, Gino.
Well, eye test, I haven't seen him do the things I saw at short. At shortstop, it was just is as bad a shortstop defensively as I've seen in big league baseball. And maybe that's not fair, but it was it was rough. But yeah, yeah, third, I, you know, he looks more comfortable anyway. India's been fine at second base, but you wonder whether he's in the plans, not in the plans. You know, Senzel's played some second base now and looked mostly okay. But you got guys playing that where they've not played for years. And some of that's because of two things, the injuries and because the Reds refused to get a shortstop in the offseason. And so this is exactly what we all did expect to happen, but it's pretty ugly. Kyle Farmer, you'd like you some Kyle Farmer?
You know, Kyle Farmer does every single thing that is asked of him.
He tries as hard as he can to do everything that's asked of him. He doesn't complain. I'm told he's a popular guy in the clubhouse. Somebody a couple days ago emailed me telling me that I needed to eat crow about Kyle Farmer as a shortstop, that I was wrong about him. And I politely responded, now, Mrs. Farmer. No, it wasn't. It wasn't Mrs. Farmer. But I went and looked at his stat line, and am I missing something? I mean, yes, he's a better defensive shortstop than Gino. I'll give you that, but
he's hitting literally exactly like he's always hit relative to the league. I mean,
yeah, 62 OPS plus. I'm like, that's, you know, what we expected.
Yeah, I mean, Kyle Farmer is a great player to have on your baseball team because he's good enough with the bat that he can do things in a pinch and he can play absolutely everywhere. I mean, I would want a Kyle Farmer on my baseball team if I could. That does not mean he should be playing every day.
Yeah, there's value in what he can bring to a team. Okay, we can talk about how much value that is, but there is real value that a Kyle Farmer type can bring to your team. If you just understand, number one, that he's not going to hit. He's just not going to hit. But I think we're probably – well, let me ask you this question because this is something I struggled with this week. And I think I'll tell you how I lean is that Farmer's probably our starting shortstop for two-thirds of the games going forward. I don't know that we'll see Suarez back at short much, if at all, once Moustakas and Votto get back.
I disagree unless who's getting benched then? India?
India, yeah. Or sent to AAA.
I mean, India's not hitting any better than Farmer is right now.
Yeah. Got a better future, supposedly.
Yeah, I mean, you might be right. I mean, you might be. Alternatively, you know, I don't know, we could see Senzel getting some time at second. You might be onto something there. You know, I'm not 100% sure about that, but I might say more like he'd start half of the games at short.
Yeah. I don't know. I just this comes back to this idea that it's not David Bell's fault necessarily. He's trying to.
I mean, what do you do in this circumstance? Who would you start? Serious question. Who would you start at short right now?
The truth of the matter is, I would probably start either Senzel or India at short. They're both you would think going to hit better than Kyle Farmer, and they will. Yeah. You would think defend better than Suarez, but the problem is, India and Senzel have played shortstop in their lives. They both played it in college some. They've not played it in years. And shortstop in the big leagues it's hard. You know, it's really, really hard. As we saw from Suarez, who, you know, at his worst is an average third baseman. He stepped over to shortstop and just looked completely overmatched. So,
well, and I mean, you remember they tried an experiment with Senzel in short, and that lasted all of about 7 seconds.
Well, and if it shows you how desperate David Bell's gotten is, the word I got was that after that experiment that David Bell had no interest in Senzel ever being back on the infield. And he has played him on the infield this year some, and he's actually looked, you know, not out of place on the infield.
Yeah. He's a good second baseman and a good third baseman. I mean, I saw him in AAA. He looked excellent there.
Yeah. 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 I mean, he, bless his heart though, he has like a bad ankle and bad hip and bad shoulder all right now. He's not on the disabled list, but he just gets dinged up more than, it's frustrating. It's more frustrating to him than it is to me, I'm sure. Who else we need to talk about in this lineup? Yeah, let's talk about our guy that we've been championing for years. MVP candidate, Jesse Winker.
Jesse Winker.
I mean, he's a... my son follows all these crazy Instagram accounts that, you know, do top five players of all time and top five hitters right now and top five MVP leaders in all different sports. And so he came to show me that they had Jesse Winker as the as number one in the MVP race in National League right now.
Wow.
I know, right? Crazy. I don't know how that's going to hold up, but dude is a legit star. I mean, can we say, I guess I've said it two or three times and you have as well, but he's a legit star, isn't he?
He is. I mean, he's leading the league in batting average right now. He's up there in slugging and OPS. Like, I mean, yeah, he's having a fantastic season that should come as a surprise to absolutely no one, but some people are dumb.
Age 27. The only thing that, you know, he's certainly hitting with more power than I expected, but every one of his at-bats is almost, it's not quite a Joey Votto level joy, but it approaches it just that he seems to hit the ball hard every single time. And just, I don't know. I'll declare my undying love for Jesse Winker.
I wonder, honestly, how long it's going to be until he starts getting pitched around heavily. Cause I don't feel like he's getting pitched around yet, really.
No, no. You know who is getting pitched around? Nick Castellanos, who's, yeah, you know, even better numbers across the board than Jesse Winker. He's, you know, got walks in seven of his last eight games or something. If you'd ask me what is today? May 20th. Who's leading the league, the Reds, in walks? I wouldn't have guessed it'd be Castellanos, but here we are.
No, he would have been like your 12th guess.
Right, right. So I'm glad he's, they're pitching around him, and I'm glad he's letting them, you know? Shogo, can we talk Shogo just briefly before we get into the pitching?
Sure.
I don't know what to make of him still. He's a 33-year-old outfielder who I've never seen. I've seen him do things that intrigue me. And we're just talking 27 plate appearances here. He's only been back for 12 games. But I'm not saying do we give up on him, but I'm saying at some point is he going to show us what we thought he was going to? Do we still feel like he is?
I mean, I don't know. I like you said, we haven't had enough of a chance to see him. I mean, I feel like it's going to be one of those things. His Reds career is starting to feel destined to be one of those things that kind of never quite gets going.
Yeah.
I mean, next year is the last year of the deal. Right now, he's probably, what, the fifth outfielder?
I'd say he is the fifth outfielder when you look at, presuming Senzel is a full-time outfielder, Winker, Senzel, Castellanos, and Tyler Naquin. Who, you know, no complaints about Tyler Naquin. So maybe we talked too much about fifth outfielders, but I don't know. I was hoping for a higher ceiling for Shogo.
Yeah, yeah. Which still may happen. I
sure.
mean, like, he's, you know, basically just now should be getting into form, you know. If Winker got hurt and came back and struggled for his first 27 plate appearances, we wouldn't blink at it. We'd be like, oh, he's just got to get back in the groove. But because it's somebody who hasn't established himself yet, we're kind of wondering what's real and what's not.
Right, right. Or he established himself in a league where we didn't get to watch him, basically.
Yeah.
I don't know. Let's shift around to pitching here for just a moment, and then we'll dig into some viewer mail questions. The pitching here, you mentioned Castillo earlier, and you're right. There were some people complaining about his last start. I was like, oh, man, he struck out 10 or 11. He made a couple bad pitches. It's true, but wow, what a turnaround from what we'd seen before. But that just shows you how bad what it was before. A 1-6 record right now for Castillo and a 7.44 ERA. It's amazing. You can't pin all this on him, but if Castillo pitches like Castillo out of his 9 games started, we probably win 6-7 of them.
Yeah.
And so instead, we've won like one or two of them. And so that's the difference between the team being above. That's simplifying things, obviously, but that's how important he is to this team. We should be winning his games.
No, I mean, if you take, you know, almost any players, any team in the league, you take their best starting pitcher, who's supposed to be their ace, and you make them pitch like the 9th or 10th best starting pitcher in the organization, it's going to alter your record.
And, you know, if he had pitched like Castillo, and I can't see any reason that he's not going to. I think the last 4 months of the year we're going to see Castillo. I have to believe that.
I mean, his last start, it was not great, but 5 innings, 11 strikeouts, you know, like you said, a couple of bad pitches. In a normal Luis Castillo year, we would just shrug and be like, well, a couple got away from him there. It's only because he's had as rough of a year as he's had that we find ourselves concerned.
Yeah, and I think it's perfectly acceptable to be concerned because, we're almost 2 months in. But I don't know. I saw enough of the old Castillo the other day that, okay, maybe we're really close. And I look at this rotation, and we talked earlier about, Di Sclafani and Gausman and Johnny Cueto, bless his heart. You remember the time Johnny Cueto's horse died?
Don't we all?
On Instagram, he posted a picture of it on Instagram. It was still the most bizarre moment I've ever experienced on social media, except for that time when one of the Reds draft picks called me out. But you look at Wade Miley, Tyler Mahle, and Sonny Gray. If you add normal Castillo in there, I got no problems with that top four with the way they've pitched. Now, Gray had a rough start his last time out. Tyler Mahle had a 2.93 ERA before today. So, 2.93 ERA in his first 8 starts. And then, of course, he gives up 7 runs in 2 innings, and his ERA is now 4.20. 420, blaze it up.
Wow, now that you're out of your old gig, you just got all the opinions.
I know, right, man? It's going to be legal in Virginia July 1. What a time to be alive. No, I'm not touching any of the devil's lettuce. But Wade Miley's been good, you know. Really, the starting pitching, other than Castillo and then Hoffman, who he's Jeff Hoffman. I mean, you know, what do you expect out of him?
I mean, this is the part where I'm gonna insert myself into the conversation here and just say the one thing that whoever is making this decision right now, this to me is a bad enough decision that person should lose their job. TJ Antone should be a starting pitcher right now. And Jeff Hoffman should be in the bullpen.
The only argument that I could see earlier in the season, and we talked about this on the podcast here, for keeping Antone in the bullpen instead of starting him, was that, are you going to be creative with him? Are you going to use him, you know, 2 or 3 innings, 2 or 3 times a week? If you do that, he's going to get enough innings to where he can still be valuable and you can choose high leverage situations. That's not what's happening. David Bell just used Carson Fulmer to blow the game the other night when he had Antone available.
Well, and not only is that not happening, something that I think people are really quick to forget is that relief pitchers get, as much as starting pitchers get hurt, relief pitchers get hurt a whole lot more.
Yeah, that's true.
You can't really throw 2 or 3 innings 2 or 3 times a week. It doesn't work that way. Like, you're going to burn him out real quick if you do that because they're not that resilient. And I went and I looked it up because I was curious. In any stretch of time, your relief pitcher that throws the most innings is going to throw max a third of the innings you would expect from a starting pitcher. From, like, a starting pitcher who is also sort of near the top of the starting pitcher innings pitched or whatever. Like, so it's three, like, there's no way that you can pick and choose, even if you were to do it, Antone's innings to make him so valuable that you wouldn't really rather have 3 times as many innings from him.
I agree. I could not agree more. You know, when I said that, I thought that's a way that you could possibly, you know, justify it. But what's happened is Jeff Hoffman has thrown 34.2 innings, 34 and two-thirds, and T.J. Antone, 21 and two-thirds. There's just, when you're a team that needs good innings, there is just no justification for having, let's be honest, maybe the best pitcher on the entire roster, T.J. Antone. He's certainly the most fun to watch with what he can do with the baseball. And maybe that's a fireable offense, like you said. Maybe if that's on David Bell, maybe he should be fired. One of our viewer mail questions I'll go ahead and ask now relates to this question. Kyle Kapler asks, and these are questions come from our friends at patreon.com/redlegradio. Kyle Kaplers asks, obvious answer is Antone to replace Hoffman, but would it be worth kicking the tires on signing someone like Mike Leake to a minor league deal? Or bringing up Tony Santillan or Vladimir Gutierrez?
I mean, I think either Santillan or Gutierrez are potential options. I mean, especially with the way they've been pitching. You certainly can look into that. Mike Leake, as far as I know, has offers if he wants them and is simply choosing to sit out the season because he doesn't want to mess with COVID. I don't know anything, but you kind of get the impression that there must be somebody close to him who's extremely high risk, and he's just like, I'm not playing in that sandbox right now.
Yeah, he's I don't know what the reasons are either, obviously, but I'm sure he's got offers. And listen, I like Mike Leake.
Yeah.
I don't have a problem with him coming back. Looking at Vladimir Gutierrez, you know, he's got three starts, looked awfully good. Tony Santillan, still looking great after three starts, 0.64 ERA. But I mean, if I'm going to maybe I go to Santillan first if I'm going the minor league route to try to fill that route. I don't know that you have to. You got TJ Antone. You know what? I might consider Nick Lodolo for what that's worth. If we're going to go down that far, but
Green's going to be getting bumped up another level at least here before too long.
Yeah. Green and Lodolo should be in AAA soon. So there's going to be some help maybe on the way. So another question about TJ Antone, because everybody likes talking about TJ Antone, especially the way that he spells his name. Chuck Nichols asks, happy Thursday, Chad and Jason. Let's talk about TJ Antone for a minute. We've been talking about him. Chuck, where have you been? Did you just tune in? We've been talking about him for several minutes. Come on, Chuck. Pay attention. Seeing him close that.
Well, I need to know, Chad.
What's that?
Because I've just noticed something that you and I say something differently. I need to know, is it TJ Antone or is it TJ Antone? You lay the stress on the first syllable and I lay the stress on the second syllable.
Ooh. Well, is, you know, I don't know. I didn't realize I did that. Are you suggesting that I say things differently sometimes?
It's possible that I'm mispronouncing it. I don't know. I get things wrong every once in a while. Not as often as you do, but sometimes.
TJ Antone. TJ Antone. Oh, we're just going to have to ask him.
We're going to have to figure it out. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good question. All right, Chuck's question, after I attacked him for no reason, says, seeing him, Antone, close out a game this week, really puts his role in perspective. He really should be a starter, and if not a starter, at least fill the badly needed closer role. What are your thoughts? And the reason I wanted to mention this one now as well is that if he's going to be in the bullpen, why isn't he getting every high leverage inning you can get out of him? And I guess if you got to have somebody at the back of the bullpen, I mean, I like Sims and I like Garrett, but, I don't know. Just goes back to the question of what's the best role for him, and it's probably starter.
I mean, so first of all, based on what I've seen from them, I think, assuming that Garrett is right now, which I think he is, I think either Garrett or Sims or Doolittle are all fine back into the bullpen. We are early enough in the season for sure now that the sort of like one or two hiccups any relief pitcher has, you know, his ERA is screwed for three quarters of the season. It's going to be taking that long to get it back down. So I don't really worry about that. I just worry about the general performances I've seen from them. You're right, TJ Antone should be in that group. And I think if those were the four guys who were coming out anytime, some combination of them, anytime the Reds had a lead, or it was even close, I would feel a lot more confident. But as you've pointed out, that's not what's happening.
Right, yeah. It's just they're using him in the worst possible way, it seems like to me. So it's a good question, and I think the clear answer, I think we agree. He just needs to be in the starting rotation. Let's quit fooling around with this. Put him in the starting rotation. And you know, if it doesn't work, you can put him back in the bullpen. He's already shown he can do that. Talk about Hunter Green and Nick Lodolo in AA. Just an update from we did this last week. Hunter Green now has pitched three games. He's 3-0, 1.69 ERA, struck out 25 and walked 3. That's ridiculous.
Is that good, Chad?
It's good, and almost equally as good. Nick Lodolo in three starts. He's 1-0 with a 0.57 ERA. He struck out 24, so one fewer, but he's walked 5. So he's walked 2 more than Hunter Green.
So when Hunter Green eventually makes his major league debut, is there going to be an episode of Red Leg Nation Radio that's just the two of you where he just spends an hour just dragging you through the mud.
We're going to do a video episode where I'm like, you know, putting some kind of balm on his shoulder, making sure he's not getting hurt. Oh gosh. Bless you, Hunter. Just stay healthy. Most exciting pitcher on the AA Chattanooga Lookouts though. Neither of those two. Do you know who I'm going to mention?
Okay.
Yeah. Former Cincinnati Reds first round pick, Nick Howard. Great former University of Virginia pitcher. Back in the organization.
Lord, there's somebody else from Virginia.
He's back. He was away and now he's back. And there was a piece that I read this week about how he's got his mind straight and hopefully he's going to be able to you know, salvage some part of a career. Hey, 4 games, 5 1/3 innings has not allowed an earned run yet. So, fingers crossed. He walked one. So, Nick Howard. Anyway, whatever, UVA. Screw that. All right. I tell you what, do we want to spend about 20 minutes here talking about the fact that the Reds claimed Michael Feliz and designated Sal Romano for assignment? Do you want to spend some time doing a deep dive into those transactions?
I really do not.
I don't either. Oh, Feliz looked pretty good since the Reds got him, but whatever. Before we go deep into viewer mail here and finish this thing off, I want to tell you something. I've been going through lately and trying to, you know, minimize, you know, trying to get rid of things and toss stuff out. So I've been in my home office here, but going through things. And I found an old scorebook. I used to be one of these guys that kept scorebooks at the games, you know. The kids won't understand what that is.
Yeah, there's no shame in being one of those guys.
Oh, I love. I haven't done it in a long time, and I miss it, actually. But so I found one, or I found several of my old scorebooks, and I just flipped open to it, a random page. It was a Reds-Giants game at Synergy Field from April 28th, 2002. It was a 1:15 start. Reds and Giants. So quickly here, I want to see if you can, how many starters on this team you can give me. I'm breaking this out on you and I didn't tell you to anticipate it, but.
April 28th, 2002.
So who's the shortstop? He was leading off that day.
That'd be Barry.
Barry Larkin.
So, let's see. Was Griffey healthy at the beginning of that season?
Well, he wasn't playing in this game, and doesn't look like he pinch hit either, so probably not.
Okay. Adam Dunn?
Adam Dunn was hit cleanup that day, hit 2 home runs.
Casey?
Sean Casey batted 3rd that day. He had a single, a walk, and was hit by a pitch.
Boone?
Aaron Boone hit 5th that day, 0-for-4, 1 walk.
You know, it was fun. I just threw Boone out there hoping I'd get at least one of them.
Oh, sneaky. Pretty sneaky, sis.
Let's see. The outfield is tough back then, 2002. Was that a Tavares or a Patterson year?
It was not. It's a center fielder that I would probably have had difficulty coming up with. But you should be able to get the right fielder.
It wasn't Jay already.
No. Who was the big star, future star before Jay in right field? Adam Dunn's buddy? Austin Kearns.
Oh, Austin Kearns.
Yeah, Austin Kearns. Kearns was 2-for-3 with 2 singles and a walk. Center fielder was Juan Encarnacion.
Oh, wow. Okay, yeah, I would not have gotten that.
Yeah, me either. So we got second base and catcher left.
Okay, so David Ross maybe?
No. I think this is before David Ross.
All right. I'm going to name a few random Reds catchers and then I'm going to give up. They may or may not be timeline appropriate.
Before you do, I'll say it's someone that played a long time for the Reds as a catcher.
Oh, was it Taubensy?
It was not. After Taubensy.
Hernandez?
No. He kind of got forgotten because he went to play for the enemy.
Hannigan?
No.
Oh, LaRue.
Yeah, Jason LaRue. Jason
LaRue. There we go. Okay. We just got to get second base now, right?
Second base. I think he played for the Dodgers and the Rockies as well. And maybe other teams, but
not Jimenez.
No. This might be a tough one. He didn't play for the Reds long.
Bip Roberts?
No. I think this is after Bip Roberts. Todd Walker.
Oh, okay. I remember Todd Walker, but yeah. Yeah.
So, starting pitcher was Jimmy Haynes. Pinch hitters that day, Reggie Taylor, Wilton Guerrero, and other and relief pitchers Scott Williamson, Gabe White, Luis Pineda, and Scott Sullivan. For the Giants, the leadoff hitter was David Bell, current Reds manager, David Bell. And Barry Bonds hit no home runs, and Adam Dunn hit two that day. So anyway, I don't know why we did that. That was a waste of time, and it's always fun to quiz you.
I mean, those kinds of things are fun. I enjoy it. And I'm sure that our readers enjoy hearing me guess random Reds players from anywhere in a 15-year span near that particular year.
They're sitting there thinking, come on, it's obviously Juan Encarnacion. I've gotten good feedback when I've quizzed you on those lineups before, and so I thought, well, let's do it again. And, of course, I didn't prepare you, so that makes it even better.
No, I don't want to be prepared. I'm not pulling up base. I'm not cheating on the test. Oh. It's a pop quiz. Let's see what I can do.
Oh, man. Spoken like a true professor. Viewer mail questions. These questions are from actual viewers. Actual letters from actual viewers that come from our friends at patreon.com/redlegradio, where you, too, can support the Reds.
Chat.
Yes?
Sorry. I'm going to interrupt you here for just a second. I've decided something. For the longest time, I have fought with you about viewers versus listeners. And I don't know if you noticed me slipping it in just now, but henceforward, I shall refer to them all as readers.
Okay, there you go. See, that's fine.
That's my new move in the battle, the eternal battle.
Ah, so you're trying
going
to...
Going farther in the other direction.
Yeah, trying to deke me a little bit, as they would say in hockey. I like it. All right, so first...
from our readers.
Let's do that. Joe Farsing, if Joey Votto were an Italian dish, what would he be? I'm going with chicken parm. If Joey Votto were an Italian dish, what would he be? I'm going with chicken parm. I don't know how to answer that. I'm going to say...
Chicken parm is wrong. Because chicken parm, if done correctly, is obviously delicious. Joey would be one of those things that seems like it shouldn't work, and then yet somehow is the most delicious thing you've ever had. Everybody knows about chicken parm. I'm not sure what Joey would be, but...
So it's something special, but maybe it's not as well known as chicken parm. Something like that?
Yeah. It would be a, like, you go in, and they're like, this is really good. And you're like, really? And they're like, yeah. And then you try, and you're like, oh my God, this is the best Italian food I've ever had before.
Yeah, it's a Hall of Fame. It's a Hall of Fame food.
Yeah.
I'm going to say lasagna alla bolognese.
I could go for that. I could see it.
Yeah, whatever. I don't know. I just wanted to say that. I've been working on my Italian, man.
I can tell.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Ciao. Tutti. Mike Perry asks, which do you think has hurt the Reds more over the last few years? Not spending big in free agency? Or not developing key prospects to be high value contributors on the big league level? Yes.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
You could argue either one, right? I mean, there are a few. They did spend a little bit in free agency and got some guys in here that help. And they also had a few. You know, we talk about Senzel in India and Tyler Stevenson. Now, you know, we're starting to see some Jesse Winker. You know. Those are prospects that, you know, they didn't sign Castillo, but they traded for him in the minor leagues. You know, Tyler Mahle. I'm talking myself into free agency being the answer there. What do you think?
Yeah, you kind of just talked me into it too. Yeah, I mean, because the issue has always been, and you know, this actually ends up being part of the thing that maybe caused some of the issues with Senzel, where he got jerked around a bunch because they refused to fill holes.
Yeah.
Like, get if you're short outfielders, go get a freaking outfielder. If you're short on shortstops, go get a shortstop. Like, if you don't have it in the organization, make some trades or sign some players.
And that's how everybody, every good team builds a roster. And now suddenly we have a few guys that actually are maybe causing me to rethink a little bit of my opinion about what the minor league system has done over the last few years. Because, you know, we get one star in Winker and you get some other complimentary pieces that really can help the team and potentially a star still in Tyler Stevenson. And who knows about Senzel and India, frankly, still, could be more than just complimentary pieces. And so, yeah, you got a hole, go fill it. But that's just too much to ask, I think. Grr. Next question. Oh, you know what we got to do before we do that? I neglected to do this. We got a new member of the Beer League softball team.
Oh, This is going to be our new. I'm going to say it before I even hear the name.
Okay.
This is our Alex Blandino. This is the utility guy who can do anything and also come pitch an inning of relief when we need it.
Ooh, and also extremely handsome.
With that knuckle curve or whatever.
Oh, yeah. He's been the best relief pitcher. No joke. He's been the best relief pitcher for the Reds this year. Our newest member of the family at Patreon got an email from my guy Brian O'Malley earlier in the week, and asking about the Patreon. He said it's finally time for me to join the Beer League softball team, and I really appreciate you joining up with us here, Brian, by signing up to be a member at patreon.com/redlegradio. Brian O'Malley. And I like what you said. I like your description, but then I see his name is his first name is spelled Brayan, and that sounds like a catcher to me. But O'Malley sounds like a first baseman.
Well, see, O'Malley to me sounds old school baseball player. I mean, that sounds like
does
all the things. I'm telling you.
So he's our utility guy that we're going to play everywhere and probably needs to be playing more because he got a little bit of a bat and he can play good defense. And
yeah, he's going to get 300 PAs and it's not going to feel like quite enough PAs.
Right. At the end of the season, we're going to be like, oh, man, I wish we'd played him more. So, Brian, thank you so much for joining us. Really appreciate your support of this this crazy, crazy family we got together here. Next question comes from Snoopaloop. Is that your alias, Jason?
It is not.
Snoopaloop. Snoopaloop says, during spring training, I half jokingly asked about Alfredo Rodriguez being a dark horse candidate for a Reds shortstop this season. Fast forward to now, and Suarez/Farmer don't look to be the answer to that position, while Alfrod, I don't know if I'll approve of that or not, Alfrod is OPSing 900 plus at AAA and has the reputation of being a plus defender at shortstop. Small sample size, sure, but what else needs to happen to get small pasta, or petite pasta if Alfredo Simon is big pasta, up here as soon as possible? Alfredo Rodriguez. Has there been a single moment since the Reds signed Alfredo Rodriguez where you thought he was going to be a big league shortstop?
No.
No, me either. I'm not sure what to say about that, but I will say this, that Rodriguez, I'm pulling up his numbers here. He's 361 average, 465 slugging, 465 on base, 528 slugging. Again, we're talking 13 games, but still.
I mean, if you're going to make a decision on only 43 plate appearances, then Aristides Aquino should have been a starting outfielder for the last 3 years.
Right, right. That's the real answer is that, oh boy, that'd be great if he really has turned into a hitter. It'd be fantastic. Because Rodriguez does have the glove to play it. That's everyone says. I'm looking what he did in Double A last year, which is actually a little better than I expected. But you know, last year was the best year he's had as a pro. He's 27 now.
You know, those numbers, Chad.
Oh right, yeah. He's 27.
Yeah.
So I don't see it. I like a petite pasta. He could maybe be a Kyle Farmer type, but I don't know. I'm not seeing it. You know who I am kind of seeing it for? You remember this guy, Jose Garcia?
Yeah.
He's back down in AAA, getting some of that seasoning that we thought he's 23.
Double A, right, and just
murdering the baseball.
Right, and he murdered it in high A also.
Yeah, too. Yeah.
So there's a little bit more of a track record there with him. He's got, you know.
Yeah. He's where he needs to be.
Coming up on 1,000 minor league plate appearances of being a well above average hitter.
Right. And I know everyone remembers how bad he was last year, and he was bad. But there's your shortstop, assuming the Reds don't go out and get one.
I agree. I mean, if he. There are going to be a lot of promotions, I guess. I think after the draft is when that usually happens. And I would not be surprised to see him go to Louisville. I imagine they'll probably be a little bit gentle with him after last year, make sure that he gets his feet wet, good and wet at Louisville before he gets another crack. But I wouldn't be surprised if that happens sooner rather than later.
Agree completely. All right, let's run through these last few questions if we can. Andrew Scott Wills, asks, which is the best circus, Ringling Brothers, Barnum and Bailey, or the Cincinnati Reds defense? Well, I'm going to say the Reds defense. We have a moose, but we don't have any other animals.
It's true.
So that's where I'm going.
It's true. We, I mean, Nibbles is on the DL.
Oh, that's true. Nibbles. You remember the time it was a thing that that Joey Votto bought a donkey for a teammate? That was great. Seth Shaner asks at patreon.com/redlegradio. Tyler Stevenson said the other day that Joey Votto had advised him a few days before he got hurt to get a first baseman's glove and get some work there. Votto even said after he broke the thumb that he was surprised it hadn't happened before and thought it was coming. Is Votto a soothsayer? Should I give him even more credit than I already do? This question was made for you, Jason.
We should always give Votto more credit.
That's always the answer. Whether he's
always.
I don't know if he's a soothsayer, but I like saying soothsayer. But yeah, give Votto more credit, please. All right, next question comes from Richard Stowler. This is kind of a follow-up on Richard's question last week about what's the most likely to happen, and he gave some options. Here he says, follow-up on last week about the 400 hitter. This may be the best time in the last 50 years to have a 400 hitter, he says. It'll take this. A 25-year-old, body of young Eric Davis, plays second base or shortstop, speed of Billy Hamilton, determination and drive of Pete Rose.
So far, you're just describing Eric Davis. That's fine.
That's true, actually. Little League and high school coaches who taught short, compact swing, great bat control, great eye at the plate, ability to hit the pitch to the opposite field, the bunt, never swings at trash pitches. Playing on a team that will cultivate a singles and doubles hitter, stays healthy with workouts for a baseball player, not an NFL linebacker. It does sound like Eric Davis that he's describing. Except singles and doubles, I guess. Proper diet and rest habits. The computer programs would never know where to shift defense or what pitches to throw. As the game's all about home runs, this hitter could hit 400. No one ever thought Pete Rose had 4,200-plus hits. It could happen. Yeah, I mean, you just created a good player in the lab.
Yeah, also, no, that's not happening. No one's hitting 400 in this environment. Sorry, guy.
No, Richard, I think if we saw a guy like that, that's probably what it would take in the current environment. But the fact of the matter is, I just saw earlier today that the league average batting average is 239. Or 237, something, 230 something, which is the lowest ever, I think. I would love to see, I don't like what baseball's become necessarily. I'd love to see a 400 hitter. You know, I remember the year that Tony Gwynn kind of flirted with it for much of the season. That was fun.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's not happening, is it, Jace?
No, not until, I mean, you know, basically I've come down hard on they need to ban the shift and they need to return the baseball to whatever it was in the 80s and 90s. And they need to actually enforce this pitchers using this sticky crap. Like, they can't use it. Like, you do those three things, and all of a sudden, I think baseball feels pretty normal again. I will say that, you know, I'll get people in my Twitter mentions sometimes being like, they should just hit around the shift. I'm like, man, I feel like if they could hit around the shift, they would do it. Like, if you could get on base even half the time, like, just by easily just dinking pitches over, you would do it. But have you seen some of these pitches these guys are throwing?
Yeah, that's what I always think is, these are the best hitters in the world. You think somebody's not going to be doing that if it's possible?
You know they have all tried. They're not going to talk about how they tried because they're not going to give themselves away like that. But you know every competent hitter has tried to see who gets shifted on. Can I be a better hitter if I hit around the shift? And if they could, they would have done it.
Yeah.
Like, and then I'll shut up. Does anybody seriously think that Joey Votto is just too stubborn to hit around the shift?
Yeah.
Captain Tinker, like, come on.
I never understand when people say that. It's just the what I always respond is, you know, the pitcher drives a BMW too. You know, he gets paid too. He's good too. You know, these pitchers, and they're lights out. And something has to change, and that's a different podcast for a different day. A couple more quickly, and then we'll wrap this one up. John Majewski, I hate to even raise this issue, he says, but if the Reds don't right the ship by the All-Star break, should they consider trading Nick Castellanos? Castellanos has a player option for 2022, and if he continues to play at an MVP level, he will certainly opt out of his contract for a well-deserved pay raise. What should the Reds do? What do you think, Jason?
I mean, probably. And Moose, too.
Yes, probably that's...
Honestly, I like Moose. I think he's, by all reports, great for the clubhouse and such, but the way this roster is currently constructed, he should be on the trade block anyway, either him or India, or, you know, one of those two should be on the trade block because you got more second baseman than you need and more third baseman than you need.
If you trade Castellanos, you are giving up on the season. You're conceding.
It is true. Well, I mean, that was the conceit, though, right?
Right.
Like, assuming that it's...
Oh, yeah, you know. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. But I'm saying, if that happens, you're giving up on the season, and then basically you are playing right into Bob Castellini's, I'm not going to pay him what he's worth. If he chooses to leave, the Reds could still pay him, you know, and bring him back. Instead, let's hope we get some because there's no chance that I'm going to pay someone what they're worth.
Yeah.
Going forward. And it's just, it all circles back around to the just, almost criminal way the Reds have, are being run from the owner's box. Ugh.
Yeah.
All right. Thomas Dennis, we'll end with this one. Thomas asks, what is something you would love to see the Reds do with a player for no reason other than it would be fun to watch? It does not have to be logical, just fun to watch. For me, he says, for me, I would love to see them roll out Alex Blandino to pitch a game with his knuckleball. Roll out Blandino as a starting pitcher. I'm in on that. You got something?
Listen, and I'm not gonna throw the whole thing out there. There's gonna be a column on Red Leg Nation here in a few days when they finally have a day off again.
I bet I know where you're going.
But
go ahead.
Man, the most fun game I have ever been at, not the most important or the most exciting, the most fun game I've ever been at was when Hernán Iribarren, who a lot of Reds fans probably remember from a few years ago, he got a cup of coffee after a long time in the minors, in his last professional game at Louisville, played every position in 9 innings. And it was fantastic. It was so much fun to just sit there and watch that and to score it also, by the way. That game was just a ton of fun. Easily the most fun I've ever had at a baseball game.
I had an idea that's where you're going because we've talked about that a couple times. That was fantastic. I don't know. I just here's what something I love to see the Reds do with a player for no reason other than it'd be fun to watch. I don't know, like win a game. Do with all your players, just win some games. That'd be fun to watch.
Chat.
When the podcast next records 1 week from today, are the Reds going to be closer to 500 or further away?
Closer.
They've got the Brewers coming to town, then they go to the Nationals. Closer. Yeah, they're going to take 2 out of 3 in both those series. Yeah. You're right, as usual, Jason. Any final thoughts for us?
I have no final thoughts for you, sir.
All right, this is Red Leg Nation Radio, episode number 376. Thank you all for joining us. You can find us wherever you find your podcasts. Talk about us if you would. Leave us a good rating or review if you feel like doing that. It helps bring more viewers or readers or whatever you all are into the family. Talk about us. If you like us, talk about us. If you don't like us, you wouldn't have made it this far in this ridiculous podcast if you didn't like us. So, Jason, man, always fun.
Always a good pleasure, Chad.
All right, for Jason Linden and, let's see here, Mauricio Pochettino. You'll have to go Google that one, both of you. This is Chad Dotson saying, so long, everyone.
Thanks for listening to Red Leg Nation Radio from RedLegNation.com. Subscribe to Red Leg Nation Radio on iTunes or through your favorite podcast app and join us for discussion of all things Reds at RedLegNation.com. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.